Anila, who's our new contributor to Solidarity Breakfast, has contributed this rather interesting conversation with Ian McIntyre, and he's from the Commons Social Change Library, as well as all these other things that he does. But if you don't know what the Commons Social Change Library is, then you're in for a treat.
My name's Ian McIntyre. I'm a Melbourne-based writer, researcher and community radio broadcaster. And one of the key projects that I'm involved with is the Commons Social Change Library.
Can you tell me a bit more about the Commons Social Change Library? What do you guys do?
Yeah, so the library is, it's an online library. It's not a physical library. So we have a website at commonslibrary.org, which features over 1,000 different resources basically to do with making social change. Our focus is very much on, I suppose, the kind of how-tos and skills to do with creating social change, as well as sort of lessons from the past. Our sort of slogan, or not, our kind of motto, I suppose, is that we exist to make activism smarter and stronger. And so the commons part of our name kind of comes from the concept of commons and things that should be held in common, and in this case we sort of are thinking about the knowledge of people who are engaged in social change and kind of trying to bring that together in one accessible place so that we can kind of learn how to do things from each other, learn how to do things better from each other. So we have this website, all the materials are free, digital, directly available. Resources are in all sorts of formats. You can listen to podcasts, you can watch videos, you can read articles, web pages, downline guides, pamphlet books, and other kind of materials. So, say we have over 1,000 resources. So, yeah, we cover a really kind of wide range of topics. So, I mean, we sort of organise things into topic groups. So, some examples are like campaign strategy, organising and organising manuals, and approaches, digital campaigning, theories of change, tactics,
So history. When it comes to those resources, what is it about them that you think is so important for organisers and people interested in creating change? Why is it an important thing for them to have access to the information from past organisers and the evidence of past successful and maybe not so successful social movements?
Yeah, well, I guess the key thing that pretty much comes up over and over when you talk to people involved with social change at the very top is, how do we win? And so winning requires doing a whole lot of other things, a whole lot of, you know, subtopics like the ones that I mentioned. We want to encourage, A, people to take action, B, to show them effective ways of taking action, or a range of effective ways of taking action, because we're not prescriptive. There's no, you know, particular model or particular single process that is always going to deliver victory. You have to sort of look at a situation and then, you know, examine that and then work out a plan, a strategy.
I appreciate that you obviously think of this as entirely contextual. Different contexts require different strategies. But I noticed when I was looking through the library that there's a really large focus on change and what it requires to create change and, you know, the practicalities of change. It's not just symbolic. It's a process that requires strategy, as you've just said, and it requires practical decision-making and implementation. Do you have a stance on how to make change? Is it something moderate and strategic, working with systems that pre-exist so that you can kind of get the most out of the situation that we have now? Or do you think of change as something that can be more radical and straight to the point and transformative?
I'm pretty loath to, sort of lay down how I think people should do things. And I think with the library, we cover all those kind of methods. I mean, I think the most effective campaigns are often ones that have multiple sets of tactics and strategies going on at the one time. So I think that's really important to have sort of a diversity and a range of things that you're applying. I think ones that are often most successful, therefore, kind of require like a range of actors. So people from more moderate through to people who want to overthrow the system as soon as possible. And so a combination of those will often win particular campaigns. I think in the long run, so that's in terms of short to medium run. In the longer run, I do think, there needs to be quite significant structural change in society, because the way things are currently set up and the people who hold the overwhelming majority of resources and power put hard limits on what we can achieve without taking that power and those resources from them.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, in terms of coming back to the library, I suppose there's sort of two sets of resources, really, broadly. There's the kind of skills ones, which I guess can often be applied to a more moderate lobbying-type letter-writing-type campaign through to a more radical campaign, and that's things like sort of, digital skills, ways of sharing messages, how to have conversations with people, that kind of nuts and bolts stuff. So we provide a lot of information about that, and I guess also information about, when new methods come through, we update. And then the other side, I suppose, is what we were more talking about just then, which is kind of approaches, I guess what you might call the kind of art of campaigning. So, figuring out, via skills-based stuff like mapping and research, who are the real power holders in a situation? Who do you need to move in order to create success? What are the best ways of getting your message out, which often requires, these things require intuition, but, there's certain approaches that can kind of focus that intuition. And
mm-hmm. That's really interesting.
Hi, I'm Ahmed from Fitzroy Primary School, and you're listening to Community Radio on 3CR.
And you're with Annie, and we're listening to a conversation that our new contributor Anila had with Ian McIntyre, Commons Social Change Library. And they went on to talk a little bit about some examples of people and how they've used the library.
Have you got any examples of where this kind of information has been applied and the library in particular has allowed people to create change and bolster their social movements?
We get thousands of hits per week, and I think in the 3 or so years since we've begun, we've had over 1.5 million hits. So on that basis, we know somebody's looking at the website, and hopefully they're learning from it. But, I mean, we also get kind of direct feedback from people. We see people sharing our materials and social media posts online. We've got various groups from people like Council of Ageing New South Wales or the Wilderness Society, and others have provided us with nice testimonials where they say, that as advocates or activists, they're continually looking at the sites. So we can sort of see from that that people are using it. We certainly hear back from people that they're using it. We've had people like the Leading Change Network who shared a lot of the work by sort of organising, I don't want to use the word guru, but organising WIS or whatever, Marshall Gams. They chose to bring their materials to us to host on the library and to get us to help them build, their own website and so forth. So we definitely get that kind of feedback. And that the kind of queries as well kind of help us to see, I suppose, that people are using the site and that they also sort of help us respond to movement needs. So recently we had somebody get in touch who's dealing with an industry front group. So, there's some sort of, won't name them, but there's a group who are, on the surface seem interested in the community and interested in the environment, but actually they're a fossil fuels front group trying to stop wind power.
Does that happen often?
These front groups, yep. Unfortunately, some of them have a genuine roots perhaps in the community, but a lot of them, there's a long history of corporations and so forth funding groups which appear to be community groups that are basically either trying to create demand for a product. I mean, that's something we see, we saw particularly, I guess the example would be the US, around drugs like OxyContin and stuff. You know, there were industry groups set up to kind of create, oh, there's a demand, we need something for pain. And then the drug companies were able to come out and go, well, here you go, we've got a nice product for you. But, you know, within Australia, you know, John Safran's recent book, and there's a long history of kind of exposés of groups that appear to be around health and reform for health that are actually, you know, tobacco company front groups. And within the climate change sphere, I mean, one of the things that's really fueled scepticism and really helped hold back things in Australia have been these industry front groups. So, yeah, so this person got in touch. Now, we've got lots of materials on the website about misinformation and dealing with disinformation. We've got stuff on the website about messaging and counter-messaging, like how can what are different ways you can get your ideas out in a way that people will listen to them? What are ways that you can counter messages, you know, that the opposition are giving? But we realised through this query that we didn't really have something about how do you spot an industry front group. And so hopefully, you know, we're sort of hoping that the activists who got in touch, we can now work with them to kind of develop that. And I suppose the last thing would be we also try to respond to what we can see, you know, is happening around, different activist movements, particularly in Australia, and how can we respond by putting collections of resources together or coming in to support people. So, you know, with the crackdown on protests, particularly environmental protests in Australia and threatened jailings and so forth, you know, in response to that, we put a bit of a collection together about how, you know, drawing, again, as the Commons does, it's not out of my head or out of the other librarians' heads, it's drawing from, you know, Australia's activist community, but bringing that together to talk about, you know, how do you support people when they're in jail? What do you do around arrests and that kind of thing?
And is there a way that interested listeners would be able to support the library in providing the support that you provide to these activist groups?
Yeah, so if people, I mean, there's a number of ways people can support us. One is just, use the library. You know, if you've got experiences that you want to share or you've seen a good resource, perhaps it's internal to a group that you've worked with, or you think there's a learning point that could be shared, you know, share it with us. People are most welcome to, you know, create resources, send them to us, or get in touch with us. People can, of course, donate to us to help us with, you know, sort of running costs and all that stuff. And people can also volunteer. You know, right now we're running a big project about making activism accessible. And, volunteers are like a really big part of sort of helping us with that particular project kind of translate activist resources into accessible formats, which is easy read.
Can you tell us a bit more about what it is that can sometimes prevent activism from being more accessible, and also what your project, for instance, Easy Read, actually provides?
Often, that's a big question. I think often, you know, it's just like any other part of society. It's often kind of easy for people to forget about people with disabilities or to feel like, you know, the changes that are required to make things more accessible are kind of too difficult or too expensive, and there's too much rush on to do other things. At the same time, I think there's a really strong desire for people to make things more accessible, whether it's kind of websites and information can be kind of read and taken in more easily, or that their events are open and able to be understood and participated in by people with a range of disabilities. So I think that, you know, there's a genuine interest in this stuff. And so far we've produced a couple of guides to making events more accessible, and we've seen, yeah, again, on social media and so forth, those shared around a lot. We've had some good feedback about those. I mean, we're not perfect ourselves, so we're also in the process of kind of updating our website and the way that we use images and the way our text is on the website, and making other tweaks to make our website more accessible. In terms of Easy Read basically involves creating documents, you know, for people who have difficulty reading. So that might be people with intellectual disabilities or low literacy, or people with English as a second language. And it's something that some government departments are increasingly doing, and some disability groups, organising groups themselves are doing. But yeah, we've done some training with a disability organisation so that we can translate some of our materials. So you wind up with a document where you have a series of single sentences in quite simple language with an image, and, you know, you just break down concepts and stuff. It's not really simple to do, but we felt that it was an important thing for us to do. The other part of this project is that we're kind of collecting and creating new resources with case studies and examples of activism by people with disability. So the things that they've done over the years, their ideas, you know, and we've got various disability activists sort of helping with that.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also going to be holding a seminar in May, and then kind of sharing resources about what activist groups can do to make their activities and their work more accessible.
So where's the library heading?
Oh, well, well, we're always adding new materials. Things are always changing, and there's so many different issues and so many different methods. So we're definitely adding new materials all the time. We're trying to get ourselves out there more in some forms. I mean, at the moment with social media, we're mainly kind of on Facebook and Instagram, and so definitely looking for volunteers and other people who can help us get our shared activist knowledge out via other channels, like sort of, you know, TikTok and LinkedIn and Twitter, to what degree people are still using that. After we've got the accessibility project happening at the moment, that's a big part of our time. I'm working with members and former members of the University of Melbourne's Casuals Network on an oral history about, you know, the amazing campaign they ran there 2019-2020, where they really rejuvenated the branch and created this Casuals Network, who were able to force a number of concessions from management, most importantly being that management have now paid back $45 million in stolen wages. And that came out of a grassroots member-led campaign, and so we're helping them put that together because we think that would be a really useful resource for unionists and university workers and workers beyond that across the country.
Great. I'll have to make sure to keep my eyes on that.
And that was from Anila, our new contributor. Very interesting stuff. Her chat with Ian McIntyre from the Commons Social Change Library. It's on the net. You can have a look. And obviously you can also involve yourself.